Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media, on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Hit us up at the new text and voicemail line here at Locked On Bulls, 331-979-1369. Save that number in your phone. Interact with us whenever and wherever you're listening to the show. Once again, that's 331-979-1369. So, Matt, what was your favorite part of that ass beating last night from the Nuggets? Because I know that they're a fringe playoff team, but holy hell, do they look a lot different than a tanking Chicago Bulls team. And a lot of really nice pieces that I low-key like this Nuggets team for a long time. And Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray and Gary Harris, who didn't play in this game, they're a whole hell of a lot of fun to watch. Obviously, without LaVine, Dunn, and Markkanen makes it a little bit different. But what was your favorite part of this ass beating last night?
Yeah, obviously, watching Nikola Jokic just rack up easy points. I mean, he was making it look stupidly easy against the Bulls' non-existent defense last night. Pretty sure he started hitting his first 7 field goal attempts. Ended up going 9 of 11 for 21 points in just 24 minutes. Also grabbing 7 boards, dishing out 5 assists. I just love to watch Nikola Jokic play. I mean, he's sort of a newer, better version of the best version of Joakim that Bulls fans saw as a big who can run the floor and run the offense, particularly in some of those, you know, seasons when the Bulls were without D. Rose because of various injuries. Jimmy Butler hadn't really ascended to that all-star caliber ISO player who could take over the offense. Jokic is better, way better than even the best versions of Joakim, who was playing like a point center kind of position. And I just really enjoy watching Jokic play. Other than that, I mean, this game was just a travesty for the Bulls. I mean, Fred Hoiberg said after the game, this was another, you know, episode of the Bulls just coming out flat and not showing any fight. And we've had that conversation about, you know, there's a difference between a team that doesn't have the talent and a team that doesn't bring forth the effort. I think that was certainly a factor last night, but I mean, this Nuggets team just made it look like the Bulls look like orange traffic cones on the defensive side of the ball. They shot 61.5% overall from the field, 20 of 35 from downtown for 57%. Pretty sure I saw that tied a franchise record for most three-point makes by an opponent in Bulls history. They had 77 points at halftime. They had 113 after three quarters. That set a Bulls franchise record for most points allowed through three quarters in a home game. I mean, like all sorts of bad records were being set in this one. The Bulls trailed by as many as 46. The Nuggets clearly sat everybody important in the entirety of the fourth quarter. The Bulls outscored the Nuggets by 10 in the fourth and still lost by 33. I mean, this game was just a giant nightmare of a game where, other than Bobby Portis racking up 15 points, that was a career best, his sixth straight game with 15 or more points coming off the bench. He had a decent night. That That about does it.
Well, I like how you put that. You could throw Cristiano Felicio in there too as well. Even though he was a minus 23 in the plus minus, he had 16 points on 7 of 9 shooting. He had 5 rebounds, 1 assist, and 1 steal. You could throw in Cameron Payne too, and Noah Vonleh as well. Cameron Payne went 4 for 7 in this one, 3 for 4 from the three. He ended up with 11 points and 6 assists, 2 steals and a block. Noah Vonleh, 5 for 8, 4 for 6 from three, which was really nice to see. 8 rebounds and 14 points in 24 minutes. So, like you said, this was over before it even began, and it's surprising in the factor that coming into this game is a little bit nervous, especially if we thought any of the three between Markkanen, Levine, and Dunn were going to play. If you can remember back about 6 weeks ago, where the Bulls went to Denver and made it really close, and Will Barton dropped like 46 points against the Bulls to pull out a win, a 111-110. But yeah, this is a completely different Bulls team that this Nuggets team is came into Chicago and saw. And I'm kind of relieved that Don Markkanen and Levine all took the game off. They for various things, because the Nuggets have only won 11 games on the road coming into last night's matchup. 11 games all season on the road. They've been pretty good at home. You see a lot of Bulls fans tuning out, and this is part of the reason. I mean, if you don't have Dunn, you don't have Markkanen, you don't have Levine playing, especially in the stretch of these last few games, it's good for the tank. It's good to solidify the position and hopefully move up one or two spots in the upcoming draft and better your odds. But some of these other tanking teams around the league are just doing the Bulls a disjustice. Like, how about last night when Brooklyn was up 20 points and ended up losing to Charlotte?
Oh, my God. I was so pissed off watching that game.
On top of that, the New Orleans Pelicans picked up a win against the Pacers last night in a close game, 96-92. So just overall, it was not the greatest night for the Bulls and for their tanking position. I don't know what's going on with the Brooklyn Nets. Like, you're up 20 points in that game, and then you blow it to Charlotte. So that's kind of frustrating.
And the Nets aren't actually even tanking. I mean, they're just a bad team. They're not tanking for their own benefit because they owe their first-round pick. They're not even going to get that first-round pick, so it's not like they are trying to lose. It's not like they said, oh, phooey, we're accidentally up double digits in the fourth quarter, we better hand this game away, because they have no reason to.
So on top of that, yeah, if you look at the tanking standings right now, the Bulls sit a game and a half behind Brooklyn for that seventh spot. The Bulls have lost 3 in a row. Phoenix sits atop the tanking standings, losing 9 in a row, 19-53. Memphis also lost last night at the top of the draft. So this is pretty much getting separated, where now we're at a position where that Brooklyn Nets back-to-back series at the end of the season coming up in a few weeks, that's going to be all super important for the Chicago Bulls in terms of not finding a way to win either of those games and hopefully pushing themselves far enough up into that seventh spot. Keeping an eye on Sacramento too as well, because they have the same record as Brooklyn. So the Bulls could move as high as number 6, and there might be an outside chance for that number 5 spot against Dallas. The Bulls are 2 games behind for that spot as well. But some of these other teams need to start winning games in order for the Bulls to kind of slide up in there and pick up a couple wins in the last few weeks of this season. Anything else from this game that you picked up? Paul Zipser, Denzel Valentine getting some run, Justin Holiday. We saw spurts of Jerian Grant as well, who hasn't played a whole lot in the last two or three weeks. David Nwaba getting his minutes in there as well. You think, as I was thinking about this, Matt, you think that there's going to be a heavy market for David Nwaba this offseason? Like, obviously, what we've seen from the Chicago Bulls standpoint, fans from the Chicago Bulls, we know what he brings, and we think he's a pretty solid asset. Would love to have him back for next year, and I'm pretty sure the Bulls are going to do everything that they can to keep him around. But what kind of market do you think there's going to be for David Nwaba, and what kind of money do you think the Bulls are going to have to throw at him this offseason in order to retain him?
I think he certainly showed his value as an NBA player. I think he has proven himself to be a guy who deserves more than just a two-way contract or a small league minimum kind of contract. particularly on the defensive end, but also his ability to run the floor and create looks for teammates. And, you know, he still doesn't quite have that pacing or the spacing threat. He's not a regular three-point shooter. I feel like Hoiberg has mentioned that he would like to have the opportunity to help Nwaba develop that aspect of his game, but he is a guy that does love to attack the rim, and he plays some pretty aggressive high-level defense, and I like all those things about him. As far as his market value as, you know, a guy that other teams might be interested this offseason, I think there definitely will be some interest. I mean, it kind of reminds me in the same vein of Etuan Moore is a guy that nobody really expected to have such an impactful season for the Bulls, whatever that was. I think that it was like that 2014-15 season. And he turned into a very great role player on that Bulls team that went to the second round of the playoffs. And everybody said, oh, well, you know, the Bulls aren't going to afford to keep Etuan because he's going to get an offer this summer. I think Nwaba probably is going to be in a similar situation where maybe there are, you know, maybe there's a team or two that are interested in his services and would be willing to give him something like a, you know, a 2 or 3 year deal worth a little bit more money than the Bulls might want to spend, something in the, you know, in the range of like $10 or $11 million a season. So I think that might be something that the Bulls have to confront this summer and decide how highly they value him and if they want to keep him on board as they continue this rebuild.
So to just quickly scan over another storyline to connect with the Bulls this season, Kevin O'Connor put out an article a few days ago from The Ringer and talking about some awards that he was giving down for each NBA team. And a name came up, too, that I was actually surprised, and I shouldn't be surprised by this. But he brought up Bobby Portis and said that the Bulls' silver lining this season was a guy who quietly has put together numbers that are worthy of the NBA Sixth Man of the Year award considerations. And now you think of that statement right away and you go, what? Bobby Portis for Sixth Man of the Year? This is what he had to say about Bobby Portis. He said, third-year big man Bobby Portis. Portis, yes, the guy who punched Nico Mirotic, is quietly averaging 13.3 points and 6.7 rebounds over the entire season and has surged since the All-Star break with 16.2 points, 8 rebounds, and 2.2 assists on 41.5% shooting from 3 in 27 minutes per game. Projecting based on per 100 possession numbers can be risky business, but every Michael Beasley, there's a Paul Millsap. Portis may be more of the latter. The 23-year-old is averaging 28.2 points and 14.3 rebounds per 100 possessions, which puts him alongside the likes of Anthony Davis, Joel Embiid, Boban Marjanovic, and Julius Randle. It also goes on to say, the flashes alone are intriguing. He's a knockdown shooter from the deep mid-range, and it's translating to pass the three-point arc. He's also coordinated enough to attack closeouts and beat mismatches in the post. Portis's defense must improve astronomically to ever enter Taj Gibson's class, but it's hard not to be reminded of Gibson's motor and intensity with Portis. The one thing to be fair with Portis here is the offensive rating is slightly worse for opponents when Portis plays rather than when he sits, but pretty high regard from one of the few national people that actually has a finger on the pulse for the Chicago Bulls. And we just talked about this yesterday, the lack of national coverage, but I think this is nice. This is great for Bobby Portis because everything that he struggled with this season, just the nonsense that went on at the beginning of the season with the whole Nikola Mirotic thing, and be able to just focus on basketball and improving himself. And I mean, it's not crazy to say that Bobby Portis, and while he probably won't win Sixth Man of the Year, it should be talked about and considered in that fashion, because a guy averaging 14-7 off the bench, especially of late, he's played really well. So we talk about this over and over, and I feel like every few weeks we bring his name up when he's got a good game. But is it more safe to say, Matt, from your standpoint, that you feel like Bobby Portis is here for the long haul and he should and will be a part of this core going forward in terms of being competitive maybe 2 or 3 years down the road?
I mean, yeah, I think you can't be anything but enthusiastic and appreciative of what Bobby Portis has done this season after things got off to such a rocky start. And I think, you know, everything works out for the best. Some people believe that, some people don't. I think for as ugly of a season as it is, as it has been, as tough as it's been to watch some of these Bulls games, the Nico and Bobby fight contributing to Nico's desire to play elsewhere, and we'll see where that Pelicans pick ends up. Things are still very tight in that regard, but I still feel like it was a win to be able to get a first rounder for Nico. You know, he was a big part of that winning streak, and then he came in and had a hot start with the Pelicans. Have you looked at Nico's numbers in New Orleans over the last like 5 or 6 games? Yeah, bad Nico's back, people. Everybody who thought it was a mistake to trade him because he helped the Bulls win 7 games and looked like a great player. Hey, yeah, guess what? Inconsistent Nico is still inconsistent Nico. So there's that for you. But when it comes to Bobby Portis, you know, shipping Nico away has given Bobby this great opportunity to be the primary guy coming off the Bulls, bench for the front court, and he's proven himself to be a worthy, reliable guy. Honestly, other than Robin Lopez, who was on track to play all 82 games before the Bulls sat him starting after the All-Star break for the purpose of player evaluation, air quotes, Bobby arguably has been the most consistent guy all season. You know, Lauri Markkanen had that hot start, impressed everybody in his first month or two as a rookie, then had a big slump. Rookie wall, whatever. Chris Dunn has been in and out with various injuries. The month of December was great. Chris Dunn was like averaging 14 and 8 dimes in 30 or so minutes and looked like the guy who could be this team's point guard moving forward. Zach LaVine, inconsistent, you know, got a very late start to the season, had a couple of really nice games. Obviously, the highlight was his performance against Butler and the Timberwolves in that shocking upset win that you and I attended with our buddy, our Locked On Bulls listener, Robert. So, I mean, there were inconsistencies from the trio all season long, and it seems like Bobby Portis all season has been thrown in as that fourth guy ahead of Denzel Valentine, that fifth guy of this is the core moving forward. And Bobby absolutely deserves to be right there as a part of that conversation.
Yeah, I'm with you here. I think if we're gonna talk about tiers in terms of importance for the Chicago Bulls in moving forward, obviously LaVine, Markkanen, and Dunn are in tier one. They're the most important pieces on this team. But I feel like in that tier two system, like if you're talking about a tier two of importance or guys that they're gonna keep around, you throw Bobby Portis's name in there. You throw Denzel Valentine's name in there. David Nwaba. But I wanted to get back to Bobby Portis and Nikola Mirotic real quick because you brought it up. Niko Mirotic in 21 games. He's only started 6 games for the New Orleans Pelicans, averaging 13.3 points per game, 7.9 rebounds. He's shooting only 39.2% from the field and 30.7% from three. That's completely different from what he was doing with the Bulls, where in 25 games with the Bulls, he was shooting 42.9% from three, averaging 16.8 points per game and 6.4 rebounds. The shooting has gone way down, about 8 points since he's gone over to the New Orleans Pelicans. But I will say this about Nico Mirotic, is that I think he's expanded Anthony Davis's game with the Pelicans and allowed him to do a lot more, especially with Boogie out there. Anthony Davis has gone off since Nikola Mirotic has been a Pelican. Like, you look at what Nico's been able to do in terms of stretching the floor for a guy that can shoot pretty much anywhere. He's allowing Anthony Davis to kind of open things up underneath. So in that capacity, Nico Mirotic is helping the Pelicans do what they wanted out of him. His scoring and his production might be down a little bit right now, but helping opening up things for not only Anthony Davis, but for some of their other shooters on this Pelicans team, like you had brought up Etuan Moore and Drew Holiday. He's serving that role even though he's not scoring and he's not shooting as well as he did when he was with the Bulls. But to put it kind of in perspective overall these 2 seasons, Bobby Portis and Nico Mirotic's numbers together, side by side, are pretty similar. You look at this so far, and Bobby Portis only averaged about 22-23 minutes a game this season, but their points, their rebounds, their shooting percentage, their three-point shooting percentage is almost near identical. So for me, you got a first-round pick out of Nikola Mirotic. The Pelicans got what they wanted. Bobby Portis has stayed the player that we thought he was going to and hoped he was going to be once Nikola Mirotic left. So I feel like this overall is a win-win for the Bulls, and they picked the right guy to stay with. And I'm so glad that the Bulls decided not to jump on it quickly and make a rash decision and move Bobby Portis early on in this season, because he's developed into a really nice player, and he's a young asset that the Bulls have on controlled cost too. And I would like the Bulls to see if they can find a way to extend Bobby Portis and find a long-term deal this summer, and that might be on their plate along with paying Zach LaVine and trying to figure out what they're going to do with David Nwaba. But shout out to Bobby Portis, and Nikola Mirotic is doing his thing in New Orleans, so he's not here. He's helping Chicago out in the capacity that we get that second round pick. So I just wanted to bring that up in terms of him with Anthony Davis as well.
Yeah, and I mean, when it comes to Bobby, you mentioned that column. No disrespect to Bobby, but to say he's a legitimate sixth man of the year candidate is absurd. I mean, like, no, just no. It's Lou Williams, and if it's not Lou Williams, whoever's casting those votes should be shot down in the street. And maybe, if not Lou Williams, Eric Gordon, who's had a hell of a year with the Houston Rockets. And those are, you know, certainly the Rockets, a winning team. The Clippers, not so much, but what those two players have done for those teams, far and away more vital than what Bobby has done for the Bulls. Again, no disrespect to Bobby, but to say he's a six-man candidate, come on, get out of here.
I don't know. Like, obviously, he's not going to win the award, but to throw his name in the ring into that conversation isn't that...
Oh, okay, yeah, throw his name in the ring. He's a quote-unquote candidate, and he'll finish last in voting among those receiving votes. If you want to deem that a candidate, then yeah, fine, he's the six-man of the year candidate. Man.
Okay, well... So I thought that article was really good. It's nice to see something outside of Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, sort of the narrative that we get from the national media, and we don't get too much involved. Well, here's something, especially for the listener that was frustrated with national media not talking about anybody else besides those three that I had talked about, if they do talk about the Chicago Bulls. So Bobby Portis, too, obviously getting some notoriety. But... Matt, as we wrap up the show here, want to talk about the NBA playoffs coming up, because the race has gotten pretty interesting, especially in the Eastern Conference. Did you get a chance at all to watch that Raptors and Cavaliers game last night as the Bulls were taking a shellacking to the Nuggets?
Yeah, I definitely watched Cavs Raptors instead of the second half of Bulls Nuggets. I mean, I occasionally checked in to see exactly how many points the Bulls would lose by. But yeah, no, I spent most of the latter part of the evening watching that Cavs-Raptors game, which was very interesting, went down to the wire. LeBron had a massive night, 35 and 17 dimes, as well as 7 rebounds. There was some crazy stat. I think like the first time since they started tracking assists in like the late 70s as an official stat, 35, 15, and 0 turnovers had never been done before. And he had 35, 17, and 0 turnovers. I mean, a hell of a game from LeBron. The thing that was interesting to me about this game is that not only did LeBron have a massive monster LeBron James night, but Cleveland's role players played well. George Hill was 10 of 11 from the field for 22 points. I mean, friggin' Jeff Green chipped in 15, including hitting 2 3-pointers. Kevin Love had a strong game as he tries to make his comeback with 23 on 8 of 15. You know, J.R. Smith was 4 of 6 for 10 points off the bench. Calderon went 5 of 7 for 14. Like, everybody in Cleveland contributed to that win, and they still barely beat Toronto. To me, like, that's the fascinating thing. Everybody's saying, like, you know, Toronto always chokes in the playoffs. It doesn't matter that DeRozan's having this fantastic season. They're still going to choke. You know, if it's Cleveland versus Toronto in a best of seven for the Eastern Conference Finals, you can't pick against LeBron and the Cavs. And I absolutely 100% understand that narrative. But even with that huge roster overhaul that the Cavs made at the deadline, and the fact that they got younger and they added some shooting and they got better and they dished off those pieces they didn't need, I still don't know if they are on paper a better team than Toronto. It's like you have to have this ride or die with LeBron mentality as your only logic for choosing Cleveland over Toronto in a best of seven. The Cavs played a hell of a game led by an insane stat line from LeBron, and they barely won. What happens when the Cavs have an off night? What happens when the Cavs role players have duds?
Yeah, I'm not walking away from LeBron, though. Like, if there's anything that he's shown you over the last 2 weeks, is like he's flipped that switch and he's turning it on now. And like, this is another thing to keep in mind, is that Cavaliers team has not played 100% together yet. Like, 100% fully collective, they haven't played a single game. Kevin Love's been out. Jordan Clarkson's been out. Larry Nance Jr.'s been out. Rodney Hood's been battling an injury. So collectively as a group, they all haven't played together as a full unit yet. So I'm interested, because the Toronto Raptors, even with everything they gave the Cleveland Cavaliers yesterday, and the Cleveland Cavaliers were still missing people, they were able to pull out a win. Like, LeBron is just doing insane things, like, to the point where, like you had said, like, every day I feel like LeBron is doing something new, something we have never heard of in the NBA before in terms of stats, something outrageous. So I don't think I'm ready to bet against LeBron yet, especially because, like, watching the Raptors try and guard LeBron, especially early, the Cavaliers were just giving LeBron the ball every single time and, like, pressing OG Anunoby to try and guard LeBron, and it wasn't working. Like, OG's a fantastic defender, and he was coming out of college in that same capacity, and people thought he had Kawhi Leonard-level defensive skills, and his long length was like a perfect matchup for somebody like LeBron James, but he was getting torched last night by LeBron, especially early. So if the Toronto Raptors end up facing the Cavaliers, say in the Eastern Conference Finals or something, they get a matchup there, the Celtics fall away, it's going to be interesting. This Cavaliers team intrigues me, and especially when they get everybody back, and you've got Kevin Love reinserted into this lineup, and then you get a couple other pieces and you get fully healthy before the playoffs start. This team is very interesting, and I'm intrigued in terms of what they can do and how somebody's going to try and stop LeBron. Because in this Eastern Conference right now, I'm looking up and down the roster, like, outside of Giannis in the eighth seed, like, who else is going to be a LeBron stopper in this Eastern Conference? Maybe you can point to the Celtics if they can pull something off, but the Celtics don't even know if Kyrie Irving's going to be healthy and be able to play. If he's got to get those screws taken out of his knee and he can't play through that, he's done for the season. So that's another question mark, is keep an eye on the Celtics too and what's going on with Kyrie Irving, because that could play a huge factor in these playoffs.
Oh, absolutely. And as well as, you know, their rookie Jason Tatum has been playing of late, really for the better part of the season, as well as their veteran anchor Al Horford has been playing, you know, certainly defensive player of the year candidate there. Obviously, you're right. I mean, it all starts and stops, begins and ends with whether or not Kyrie can be Kyrie if the Celtics are going to go deep in the playoffs. But, I mean, I would be shocked right now, assuming that Kyrie is not Kyrie, if it's anything other than Cavs-Raptors in the conference finals, because the Cavs getting that win last night was big, because it gave them a little bit bigger of a buffer, because the Sixers and Pacers are both fighting them. Like, the Cavs are clinging to the 3 seed right now. They're not passing Boston for the 2, and Toronto's well ahead of, you know, Boston for the 1. So right now, Cleveland is at 42-39. You got Philly at 40-30, Pacers 41-31, and even Washington's right there at 40-31. So if the Cavs can hang on to that 3 seed, then you have them most likely beating Washington or whoever it is, maybe Miami, in the 3-6, and then facing the winner of the 4-5, if the 4-5 is, say, Philly and Indiana. The Cavs are going to beat them. It's the 3-6, though. They play the winner of the 2-7, so they would play likely Boston, assuming Boston could win. If Kyrie's not Kyrie, LeBron and the Cavs can handle that. I agree with you there. And again, I'm not saying that Toronto should be the favorites. I'm just saying after watching last night's game, a lot more excited about the prospect of watching Cavs-Raptors in a best-of-7 to decide the winner of the East than I was, say, a week ago or a month ago. I think that for the ongoing tired narrative of the Raptors choke in the playoffs, they always choke in the playoffs, they are good, and they are certainly good enough to give LeBron and the Cavs a fight. And depending on how much LeBron has to do to drag this team through the first 2 rounds, and what kind of shape he's in and what kind of exhaustion levels he's fighting with in that third round, I'm just saying it's not a foregone conclusion this year, like it is pretty much every year for the last 8 years, that the team that has LeBron on it is going to the finals.
Yeah, the Raptors really need Kyle Lowry to continue to shoot as well as he has, especially over the last month. Kyle Lowry's shooting over 40%. He's one of the best three-point shooters right now in basketball, which is surprising. If you look around the league and the guys that are playing, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, if there is ever a time where this Toronto Raptors team needs them to step up, especially in the playoffs, they can't go cold. Kyle Lowry, I think, he's been more important because he's had a little bit of leniency in terms of not having to feel like he's got to be the number one option. DeMar DeRozan has taken a step up this year, too, and has kind of used that space. And the battle between him and Kyle Lowry deciding who's going to take all the shots and really, really exploiting their young guys and keeping their young guys involved. And collectively, Dwayne Casey has done a phenomenal job with this Toronto Raptors team. So I don't know. I'm not ready to buy into them just because we know what we've seen before and in the playoffs. And it's kind of like what you see with March Madness teams. Obviously, these teams stay the same. College basketball doesn't, but there's just something, a feeling I have out there that, like, every time the playoffs come around, this Toronto Raptors team looks legit and then they turn it into a dud. So very interesting. I think I'm more intrigued about the Celtics and whether or not Kyrie Irving's going to be able to play through the swelling in his knee coming into the last few weeks. So I'm very interested about that. And the one last thing too, Matt, I had to laugh because I Googled Gordon Hayward's name just to see what the storylines were, because I haven't kept up with whether or not he's going to play or not this season. But I was scrolling through the articles, the archive on Google, and it's fucking hilarious. March 3rd, coach on Hayward, he's not playing this season. March 8th, Gordon Hayward won't close the door on a return. March 9th, coach still says Gordon Hayward not playing this season. March 15th, Gordon Hayward had a setback, but recovery is on track, still not closing the door on a return this season. March 18th, Gordon Hayward setback blown out of proportion. Like, every day there's an article whether or not he's coming back. I think these headlines that, like, every few days there's a headline whether or not.
Sounds a little familiar, doesn't it? 2012-2013 yes. Season in Chicago. Is Derrick Rose medically cleared to play? Is he coming back? I guess I feel for Boston fans right now if that's what they're going through. But when that was happening with D. Rose that season, amid all the speculation, it was annoying because the speculation happened despite an ongoing and steady line from the team and from Derrick Rose, the coaching staff, the front office, everybody saying, Derrick's not playing. Like, we're shutting him down this year. Like, he's not playing. And yet still, for whatever reason, the media was like, no, but might he? And then the Bulls, like, won their first round playoff series against Brooklyn and then had that second round matchup with Miami. And they were like, okay, well, now that they got Miami on deck, like, he's got to come back. And it was like, no, he's not. That's not the plan. And that's when all of that Rose hate really started, when he didn't come back and play in that second round against Miami. And you're like, really? You want to throw this dude coming off a torn ACL who hasn't been playing basketball for a year? You want to throw him into a second round playoff series cold? You want to throw him in against Wade, Bosch, and Braun cold? What the hell's the matter with you? So it'll be interesting to see how exactly the majority of the Celtics fan base handles that as Boston gets ready for their playoff run, and then especially if they win their first round, but he still hasn't come back. And will we see that similar kind of media hype and fan, hysteria about whether or not Gordon's coming back? Because in Chicago, it was one gigantic headache.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media, and we have a giveaway going on Twitter. If you want to win a Kirk Heinrich autographed 8x10 framed photo, we have that for giveaway. Today is your last day to enter, so make sure you go and follow us and retweet that picture. You'll be able to see it on social media. It's really easy. It takes 5 seconds to join, and you'll be automatically entered into this contest. We're going to pull that winner's name and announce it on the show tomorrow. So make sure you're doing that. Get those last entries in on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Follow us while you're there at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts. You'll find us. Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Hit us up, say what's up to us, and our new text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Interact with us anywhere and everywhere you're listening to the show. 331-979-1369 is the number. Save that in your phone, Locked On Bulls. But for Matt Peck and Jordan Malley, hopefully you have a wonderful Thursday. We are out, Bulls Nation.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. And on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls. Stay up to date with everything Chicago Bulls at LockedOnBulls.com. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts.